okay. We're a generation that doesn't appreciate consequences. And we appreciated consequences even less after the Vietnam War, which had 47,415 of them in combat, not counting 153,303 wounded. At the end of the 1970s, there was a catchphrase, "Don't sweat the small stuff." And it's all small stuff, always spoken more in hope than expectation. Richard Carlson, the baby boomer psychotherapist who turned the catchphrase into a bestseller in 1997, died while on book tour, the consequence of a pulmonary embolism. Steve Areno really did consider Harry Bob to be his best friend. When it came time for him to testify at the protesters' trial, he claimed he couldn't identify them because "my view was blocked by the camera." The protesters got off. The beamed traffic policeman recovered. A year later, Harry Bob ran into Steve Areno at the Ebony Lounge. Harry Bob refused Steve Areno's offer to buy him a beer. Twice. I wasn't there, so I don't know exactly how the conversation went. Steve Areno bought Harry Bob a beer on the third try. Harry Bob said that Steve Areno wasn't a bitterly disillusioned Vietnam vet. He joined the police force to avoid being drafted. They assigned him to go undercover because he owned bell-bottom pants. He was supposed to infiltrate puddles and spy on dangerous radicals, but we weren't ones, and he liked us, and we became his friends, and it was a great way to meet cute, hippie girls. His wife did like to iron, and he had refused to testify against the peace protesters. "Steve Areno is back in uniform," Harry Bob said, riding in a patrol car, which, now that year-round mugging by heroin addicts was replacing summer riots, the city could use some more of, as far as I was concerned. "What about spying on the goddamned Vault o' Kong?" I asked. Steve Areno said the only dangerous radical thing they ever did was take over the Puddles office. The political, cultural, and social phenomena of the 60s became a thin film spreading to everywhere in the 1970s, a shiny, multicolored iridescence that was beautiful to behold in a certain light, like the slick from the Torrey Canyon oil spill. Call us a superficial and slippery generation, if you will, but Pliny the Elder, Plutarch, the Venerable Bede, and Benjamin Franklin all make positive mention of pouring oil on troubled waters. Nonetheless, some cleaning up was required. Harry Bob, heedless of my grandmother, became a Democrat. Others of us became otherwise. Some got the memo late. Real name Larry's motherfucking crazy motherfucker weatherman went on bombing things. U.S. Capitol men's room, Pentagon women's room, various other rooms in government offices, police precincts, and corporate headquarters. Not many innocent lives were lost. Intentionally, it is claimed. Inexpertly, it is suspected. I happened to be in, or at, one of the worst of the 1970s bombings on December 29, 1975 at LaGuardia Airport. I don't think the weathermen did it. I don't think anyone has ever figured out who did it, but it was somebody who thought he was such a big, ideological left-winger, I'll bet. Karen had returned to Ohio. I was flying to Cleveland to see her. For once, she wasn't right there when things were going to hell, if you don't count what happened to Cleveland in the 1970s. A bomb equivalent in size to 25 sticks of Uncle Mike's Hayfield dynamite went off on the arrivals level. Pieces of bodies were strewn across LaGuardia's lower roadway. It is the opinion of the baby boom that no other generation has ever felt the horror of strewn pieces of bodies as acutely as the baby boom. I got letters from Joe Brody, when he was still in Vietnam, about leading his platoon into Vietnamese villages that had been bombed, He expressed the same opinion about the callous nature. "Asshole shithead fuckwads," was the way he put it, of his senior officers. I was upstairs on the departures level when the bomb went off. I was in the concourse bar and had just ordered a drink from the bartender, a guy about my age wearing a gunfighter mustache. There was an immense shock and crash. We didn't know if it was a bomb or if an airplane had crashed into the terminal, but some terrible event had taken place. We baby boomers are sensitive to these things. "Make that a double?" said the bartender. If Steve Areno Leary got valuable information about the weathermen out of real name Larry, it didn't do much to aid the authorities. You can't make a joke out of terrorism, especially now that globalization has produced a larger, cheaper, more efficient international terrorizing supply chain. But I'm glad we've outsourced most of it. Wherever the motherfucking crazy motherfucker militant Islamic fundamentalists are, at least I'm not hiding them in the puddle's attic. Weatherman leaders Bernardine Dorn and Bill Ayers never were captured. They had to turn themselves in 1980. Now they're passing acquaintances of the President of the United States. Some say this is dim of the President. Some say this is hypocritical of Bernardine and Bill. But in the far reaches of our hearts, we, with our deep baby boom dislike of the consequential, say, is this a great country or what? Skinny Bob, who did become a newspaper reporter, used the Freedom of Information Act to get a copy of the Baltimore Police Department file on Puddles. When the police had raided the Puddles office seeking and finding small amounts of marijuana, the charges were soon dropped. According to the file, "Officer, redacted, recommends that drug possession arrests be null pros to avoid jeopardization of undercover status of officer, redacted, at premises at which drug possession search warrant had been issued upon." Personal information in the files included such items as Puddle's staff member, redacted, states his opposition to prejudice, poverty, war, and injustice. In the opinion of undercover police officer, redacted, staff member, redacted's motivation is to annoy his parents. The baby boom starts to produce rather than consume American culture when we get to be in our late 20s, about the same age I was when I saw a sidelong reflection in the window of a storefront bay and, not realizing I was looking at myself, thought, that guy is getting a little old for the embroidered work shirt, frayed jeans, and barbers on strike look. Speaking of 20s, let me apologize for what I said 14 chapters ago about the 20s being a failed experiment at having a 60s. The 60s was a failed experiment at having a 60s. Think how things would be if they'd turned out the way, for a moment, they looked like they might. A February Sunday, spent in Dirty Eddie's unheated geodesic dome eating macrobiotic brown rice and drinking moo tea, while watching Hacky Sack Super Bowl VIII. The baby boom's influence, as opposed to existence, begins to matter in 1974. Younger baby boomers are mostly in high school and junior high. The very youngest are 10, and thus approaching the mental age for which our generation is famous. Older baby boomers have finally cleared the bongs and empty Malamar boxes out of the finished basement at my house. Bill Clinton is running for Congress, so there's ample sexual tension, a key component of baby boom life. Stephen King, born 1947, publishes Carrie. Steven Spielberg, born 1946, makes his big screen debut, The Sugarland Express, with its eerie prefiguring of the highway pursuit of O.J. Simpson, born 1947. And Spielberg is working on something that will demolish the intellectual pretensions of an entire art form, Jaws, the movie that destroyed cinema. Demolishing pretensions is a hallmark of the baby boom. Note the lack of artistic pretensions, or art, in the 1974 recording of Hey Joe by Patti Smith, born 1946. This is supposedly the first example of punk rock. Uncoincidentally, the same year, Rock the Boat is the first example of disco to hit number one on the pop charts. National Lampoon's circulation peaks, and what will become Saturday Night Live is being planned at 30 Rock. The irony pandemic has begun. Some aspects of a baby boom world are not yet evident. Bill Gates is still cutting classes at Harvard. Steve Jobs is knocking around India looking for transcendental iPhone apps. But Pong machines are showing up in bars. The long night of electronic Roman in the gloaming is beginning to fall. And the baby boom's politics are beginning to take form, of which there is none aside from middle-class resentment. Once being big, ideological left-wingers blew up in our faces, we were hopelessly split. One could consult the polling data on this subject, but a generation that is expert at lying to ourselves isn't going to have trouble pulling George Gallup's leg. The first thing that happened after the 26th Amendment lowered the voting age to 18 was a landslide victory by Richard Nixon. Baby boomers who are younger or female tend to vote for the silly party. Baby boomers who are older or male tend to vote for the stupid party. Then there are the independents, proud of the fact that they don't know which is which. The baby boomer presidents that we've had so far, Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, and Barack Obama, are spread as far across the political map as you can get without going to Pyongyang. Sometime around 1974, I actually did read a little Karl Marx. Karl was a bit of a baby boomer before the fact. Middle-class attorney's son, sometimes student radical, unpublished novelist and poet, underground journalist, sponger on a crackpot rich buddy, and talking through his hat. Karl Marx was a very smart man. Das Kapital is a very bad hat. Given all the liberties the baby boom has taken, we ought to be libertarian. We should be adhering to the Clinton rules. That is to say, the rules the Clintons exemplified. Mind your own business and keep your hands to yourself. Hillary, mind your own business. Bill, keep your hands to yourself. But the libertarian creed of individual dignity, individual liberty, and individual responsibility comes with that responsibility kicker. And there's the Atlas Shrugged doorstop, which got some baby boomers all excited and the rest of us wondering who hid the strunk and white. Plus, a wholehearted embrace of Ayn Rand's philosophy of dimly lit enlightened self-interest can end up making somebody sound like a selfish, loony old bitch such as Ayn Rand. Better if we all just claim we're a social liberal and a fiscal conservative. And never mind what the farm boy said when he saw the circus giraffe. There ain't no such creature. What we actually are is antinomian. It's a theological doctrine. The baby boom is not a generation much given to studying theology, but we seem to have figured out this one. Antinomianism is the belief that faith, the baby boom has a lot of faith in itself, and grace, the baby boom has been graced with a lot of good things, allow men, and let us hasten to add women, to be, according to Webster's Third International, freed not only from the Old Testament law of Moses and all forms of legalism, but also from all law, including the generally accepted standards of morality prevailing in any given culture. That's us, in a nutshell. For a term used by theologians, antinomian is unusually clear-cut. Latin anti, against, Greek nomos, the law. Antinomianism was carried to an extreme by the 3rd century Gnostic Christian sect known as Opites. Gnostic is another good baby boom word from the Greek know-it-all. The Opites revered Cain, the Sodomites, and the Genesis serpent, and thought that the good guy in Exodus was the Pharaoh. That's us, when we're carrying things to extremes. We're a generation that is often accused of carrying things to extremes. In fact, we're a generation that carries things as far as we want to. Until we get tired of carrying them, then we drop them on the rest of you. But we've never dropped our antinomianism. No rules is the motto of a popular baby boom steakhouse chain. It may seem to be a contradiction that a generation opposed to personal restrictions of any kind has, since coming into political power, created a welter of legal and regulatory intrusions on private life. My kids have to wear hockey helmets to play puff billiards. But we're a contradictory generation. And it's fun to make rules. For other people, our spouses would kill us if they caught us with a big gulp. We gave up smoking, and we're 50-plus, so what do we care about 64-ounce Mountain Dews lighting up within 10,000 feet of a building entrance and not being able to buy a beer even though you're old enough to vote, get married, fight in Afghanistan, and be executed by lethal injection? And too bad about people who have to take their shoes off at airports because they aren't flying private. Besides, it's the job of politicians to pass laws. And the baby boom is very good at politics. We've vaulted the threshold. We've mastered the skill set. We have the enormous power of bullshit. Using bullshit in the political science sense as a technical term meaning political science. Other generations say baby boom politics are polarized. Don't they know their history? What's happened to the American educational system? I mean, other than that, we took it over. Now, 1861, that was polarized. MoveOn.org? Tea Party? We have Game On. We've got tremendous depth of bench. The point spread is zero. We came to play. We're great at politics. Other generations are just jealous. We're so good, they can't forgive us. I can't forgive myself, said Joe Brody. It was sometime in the late 1970s. I was at his house out in the woods in New Hampshire. It was late at night. Joe's kids and wife were in bed. We had had too much to drink. Joe said, I can't forgive myself for what I did in Vietnam. And he began to cry. And I thought, oh, Christ. It was only a few years since Lieutenant Calley, given life in prison for the My Lai massacre, had had his sentence commuted by Richard Nixon. I didn't want to come off as less sensitive and understanding than Richard Nixon, but we needed more to drink. Joe, I said, we've known each other for 20 years. Whatever happened, I understand. Joe said, it was my second tour. I had this platoon, old draftees. I mean, by then, any idiot could figure out a way to dodge the draft. I understand. Every day when we'd go out on patrol, we'd just go out. I'm so ashamed of what happened. What happened? We'd just go out. I don't understand. I hit them. We'd go out on patrol, and as soon as we were far enough away, I'd stick everybody behind a dike in some rice paddy, and we'd sit there smoking cigarettes and listening to Sly and the Family Stone on the ghetto blaster. And when we came back, I'd lie about all the hooches we'd searched and bad guys we'd had firefights with. I'm a Marine, damn it. I don't know if I can ever forgive myself. If I'd been thinking quick, I would have said, if Henry Kissinger can forgive himself for getting the Nobel Peace Prize, your ass is golden. That desire to do good without too much personal inconvenience that lurks in most of us. Barbara Pym, the sweet dove, died. 17. Ripeness is all. Everything's all right. It turned out okay. Better than okay. Life has been much more fun since the baby boom took over. Mommy, why are there scarves tied to the bedposts and daddy's in your bedroom? And there are plenty of fun tales to be told about the baby boom in the 1980s, the 90s, the double aughts, and today. But we're saving them for psychotherapy sessions. If you go to a psychotherapy session and just sit there saying nothing, it makes it seem like something's wrong with you, psychologically. By the end of the 1970s, the baby boom character had been formed. Our last youthful exuberance, punk, came just before Generation X's first youthful exuberance, goth, a subtle shift from fuck you to I'm fucked that indicates the baby boom will remain in control for a long time to come. Our passionate belief in change hasn't altered, going from spare change to hope and change, with stops along the way for you'd better change your ways, change of life, and any change in a wart or mole. We're still opposed to prejudice, poverty, war, and injustice when they happen to us, but at least we're opposed to them. There have been times and places. The 1960s South, Benedictine monasteries, the 1860s South, and divorce court, where previous generations made strong arguments in favor of the aforementioned, which you won't hear us doing. At least, not very often, except in divorce court or during hostile corporate takeovers, or when Iran has nuclear weapons, or looks like it maybe does, or wants to. If the baby boom went around being prejudiced against races, religions, ethnic groups, genders, and sexual orientations, date night would be pretty much down to a dose of Cialis and a box of tissues on the bedside table. Who would invest in our baby boondoggle IPO if poverty meant nobody had enough money to buy the worthless stock? War is wrong. Itchy uniforms and ugly shoes. We don't like injustice. We don't like justice either, because we're the generation that's not judgmental. And who the hell put traffic surveillance cameras at every goddamn intersection? Oops, that was us. We put surveillance cameras everywhere when we remembered how Joe Brody and Billy and Bobby Stumpf and Johnny McKay and Steve Penske and Jerry Harris and I were going to vandalize Northside High's football field with weed killer. The baby boom has had politics figured out since at least 1980. An American and a Russian are talking about Ronald Reagan and Leonid Brezhnev. The American says, "I hate Reagan so much I pissed on his limousine." The Russian says, "I hate Brezhnev so much I shit on his limousine." The American says, "Well, to tell the truth, Reagan wasn't in the limousine when I pissed on it." The Russian says, "Well, to tell the truth, my pants weren't down." The key is inept leadership. This makes things easy on followers. The baby boom has always gone in for following inept leaders. Follow Keith Richards and you can wind up in some sort of trouble. Follow Napoleon and you can wind up in Moscow. Prior generations didn't have politics figured out. When my godmother was a freshman in high school, she began to read the Atlantic Monthly in the school library. One night at dinner, she announced, "I think Coolidge is a dope." Her father made her stand in the front hall closet for half an hour for showing disrespect to the President of the United States. I have it on good authority that President Reagan told the limousine joke himself. Prior generations didn't have diversity figured out either. There was another joke, considered quite hip in 1962, and the laugh line was almost the same as what the serious pundits were saying about who was most likely to be elected president in 2008. A man dies and goes to heaven, but doctors resuscitate him, and he comes back to life, and everybody wants to know, what's God like? She's black. Being different wasn't always considered normal, if not obligatory. not even in the freewheeling 60s. When Tim Minsky was a senior at Yale, he shared an off-campus apartment with a roommate who was diabetic. This was before the ready availability of disposable needles, and the roommate was supposed to boil his syringe after every insulin injection. One of the kids with whom Tim and I had gone to high school, a serious type named Danny Phelps, was applying to grad school at Yale and stopped by to visit Tim. Danny glanced into the pot of water boiling on the stove and gave Tim a puzzled look. Tim said, "Danny, there's a confession I've been wanting to make for a long time. I've never told this to anyone. I'm a heroin addict." Danny sat down at the kitchen table, burst into tears, and said, "Tim, there's a confession I've been wanting to make for a long time. I've never told this to anyone. I'm a homosexual." If Tim had been thinking quick, he would have said, "So's Anderson Cooper, and Barney Frank, and Rufus Wainwright, and Alexander the Great, and Gomer Pyle, and the mutant superhero Northstar in Marvel Comics' X-Men." A perfect baby boom touch, identity politics for secret identities. But Tim couldn't think that quick, because none of those people were out of the closet in 1968. Tim didn't know what to say, and felt like a jerk. And feminism is so far along among baby boomers that women aren't even bothering to make men feel like jerks anymore, outside of marriage. As far as I can tell, third-wave feminists are having a screaming, senseless argument with themselves about whether women can be simultaneously managing director of the International Monetary Fund, Chancellor of Germany, Nobel laureate, Supreme Court justice, author of the best-selling book series in history, CEO of Xerox, and mother of three, when there are only so many hours in the day. I understand that House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi is lobbying Congress to lengthen the day to 72 hours. Meanwhile, baby boom men are left to wonder, but never allowed, whether hand that rocks the cradle and all that. Feminism hasn't always been a matter of women having a leg-wrestling match with their own other leg. There are some things the baby boom has done that we're not proud of. We used up all the weird. It has always been the special prerogative of youth to look and act strange, to alarm and surprise their elders with peculiar dress and manners. Cicero mentioned it, "O tempora, O mores." So did my mom, although in English. But the baby boom exhausted the available supply of peculiar. Weird clothes? We wore them. Weird beards? We grew them. Weird words and phrases? We said them. Weird attitudes? We had them. Thus, when it came time for the next generation to alarm and surprise us with their peculiarities, they were compelled to pierce their extremities and permanently ink their exposed flesh. That must have hurt. We apologize. The baby boom unleashed the safety hysteria on the world. I recently bought a stepladder so festooned with stickers warning of the types and kinds of peril entailed in operating this device that it lacked only bold capital letters stenciled in signal orange upon each stepladder step, "Do not step on ladder." I cannot get into my car without setting off a panic among admonitory bells and buzzers cautioning me to buckle this, close that, and lock the other thing. Of course, each child must be accompanied by a full-scale parental security detail on every visit to a sporting event, school activity, shopping mall, public restroom, scout jamboree, and Catholic mass, especially if the tyke is within inappropriate touching distance of a priest or scoutmaster. We bother and control our older children and interfere in every aspect of their lives because we don't want them horning in on the fun of being juvenile, which rightfully belongs in perpetuity to the baby boom. Although I also blame the kids in the helicopter parent air support child relationship. It takes two to tangle hotel papa to Alpha Sierra Charlie. Debit card deposit inbound at 0900 hours. And despite the fact that we are now at the age when our generation has full control of the levers and pulleys of the American political mechanism, we haven't done much to legalize drugs except print up some "medical marijuana makes me sick" bumper stickers. Safety is so inconsistent with the spirit of the baby boom that it's like hearing The Clash performing Gilbert and Sullivan at the Nixon Library. Perhaps post-traumatic stress disorder explains the baby boom's safety hysteria. Doing the things our generation did and coming through them safely? That's hysterical. Anyway, we grew up. We got married. We found true love. This wrecked the marriage. But we're a caring generation. We sometimes take care of the kids on weekends. We got jobs. We made money. We spent it on cocaine. Then we made money with junk bonds for leveraged buyouts. Until the LBO market collapsed and the savings and loan crisis happened, and some of us, such as Michael Milken, had to go to jail. Then we made money in the dot-com bubble. Hope you're not still waiting for the web van grocery delivery or the chew toy you ordered from Pets.com. Then we made money with subprime mortgage lending securitization and collateralized debt obligations. Sorry about the foreclosure. One thing about moving the family back to Mom's house, she may be getting a little dotty, but she still makes a great meatloaf. Now we'll make money with category killer smartphone apps. But whatever it is that the baby boom has and hasn't done, it's worked. First, look at the butcher's bill. When the greatest generation took charge of America in 1961, their esteemed John F. Kennedy and his pals began a war that, according to the Department of Defense, left some 58,200 Americans dead from battle and its attendant accidents, incidents, and disease. And this for a purpose that has yet to be explained. That's not as completely horrible as what the idiot generation preceding the greatest generation did. They killed 405,399 Americans in World War II and another 36,576 in the Korean War. True, the idiots didn't start the wars, but they did fuck all to prevent or preempt them, and may they rot in hell. The baby boom took charge of America, and hence, for all intents and purposes, the world, in 1988. That's when we decided to skip a generation of political leadership. We bypassed the ever-risible silent generation represented by bobblehead Michael Dukakis trying to take a ride in a tank. Younger readers should consult YouTube. A laugh is guaranteed. We elected, as a sort of stand-in father figure, George H.W. Bush. And soon we'd have a Bill Clinton White House full of the baby boom and a Newt Gingrich Congress equally full of it. 382 Americans died in the Persian Gulf War, 4,488 in the Iraq War, and 2,170 in Afghanistan as of this writing. That's an improvement. We do have blood on our hands, but there will be less "out damned spot, out I say" when our conscience performs its Act 5 of Macbeth. Although, let us not let ourselves off too easily. What with allowing villainous slaughter to run amok in the Balkans for most of a decade, staying seated in the bleachers during the Rwanda butchery, being perfectly oblivious to the oncoming catastrophic attack on New York and Washington by militant Islamic fundamentalists, giving no thought to what the Pandora's box of the Iraq War contained for Iraqi civilians and so on, will probably rot in hell too, but in an upscale neighborhood of it. Now look at the balance sheet. The size of the world economy has more than tripled since baby boom students quit paying attention in economics class. World trade has grown enormously. I don't want to take all the credit myself, but I did buy a cheap Indian batik bedspread after I got my first job. The per capita gross domestic product of India in 2013 dollars was $691 in 1972 and is $1,734 now. Then I bought some cheap Japanese stereo equipment. Japan's per capita GDP went from $5,104 to $47,783 in the same period. Chinese electronics were even cheaper. China's per capita GDP has gone from $724 to $6,741. And we haven't done so badly ourselves, with U.S. per capita GDP growing by $18,725 to reach a current figure of $51,248 on the baby boom's watch. More to the point, morally speaking, there's the World Bank's Index of Global Extreme Poverty, by which they do mean extreme. People living on less than a buck and a quarter a day. You can't even buy anything at the dollar store for $1.25 these days. In 1981, 52% of people in the developing world were that poor. By 1990, it was 43%. By 2008, the last year for which the World Bank has complete data, it was 22%. This still leaves 1.29 billion people in starving and ragged misery. You might want to move the decimal point one place to the right on your check to save the children. But World Bank preliminary estimates indicate that, despite a worldwide economic slowdown, extreme poverty continues to abate. The baby boom is more famous for repeatedly declaring that we're moral than for repeatedly acting that way. But the Earth's increase in widespread well-being and decrease in widespread war couldn't have happened without a generation of self-indulgent Americans, avid for all the good things in life, and disinclined to put themselves, and hence, for all intents and purposes, the world, to too much trouble. There have been some glitches in the baby boom's beneficent self-indulgence, especially when we were young and impetuous. The murder rate per 100,000 Americans went from 5.1 in 1960, when Joe Brody was first considering whacking his stepfather, to 10.2 in 1980, when the baby boom was between 16 and 34 and still buying blow and quaaludes from shady characters in the disco parking lot. We've gotten a grip on ourselves since then and put a trigger lock on the pistol in the desk drawer. The murder rate is back to where it was in the halcyon 1950s. We've had a generational tendency to liberate things, going all the way back to Mrs. Furstein's decorative garden rocks. Incidents of property crime, burglaries, larcenies, and petty thefts, was at a rate of 1,534.3 per 100,000 in 1960. The rate was 3,309.0 by 1971. I assume the .0 represents Steve Areno Leary's failure to file a police report about the liberation of the Puddles office by the Balto Kong. The rate peaked in 1980 at 4,851.1 and is now down to 2,703.1, although I don't know if Bear Stearns, Lehman Brothers, and Fannie Mae are counted in that figure. And we always stole a lot of cars. At the time, Joe Brody claimed he had perpetrated theft by taking with the family automobile, the rate per 100,000 was already 183, and by 1989 it had reached 630.4. But that was during the Bush recession, just after we had all splurged on BMWs, and how many of us parked them in a bad part of town with the windows down, took the bus home, and called Allstate. A more persistent problem with the baby boom's beneficence is that we aren't as good as we claim we mean to be at spreading the benefits around. Although America's per capita wealth is 37% greater than it was when the baby boom began its rise to national domination, 15.1% of American families are now living below the official federal poverty level. In 1972, the percentage was 11.9. This is not the World Bank's extreme poverty. The U.S. government 2013 poverty threshold for a family of four is $23,550, food stamps, Medicaid, and housing subsidies not included. In 1950 dollars, $23,550 would have been $2,436.43, or a weekly wage of $46.85. According to historical statistics of the United States, the average weekly salary of people employed in finance, insurance, and real estate was $50.52 in 1950, and the average salary of people in retail trade was $39.71. If you're poor in America today, you're making a little less than Billy and Bobby Stumpf's dad was making selling whole life and term before his reserve unit got called up and he went off to fight in Korea for peanuts. And you're making a little more than Jerry Harris's dad was making managing the produce department at a grocery store. But wherever we draw the poverty line, having 15.1% of the country below it is nothing to be complimented upon. And before we baby boomers indulge ourselves in some canned indignation about the gross inequities of corporate capitalism and how Warren Buffett's income tax rate is lower than his secretary's, let us pause to consider what our generation has left in its tracks. The fragile naifs who stayed at the 60s ball too long. The muddled goofs still beguiled by large thoughts. The drug-sodden burnouts. The poor souls who flunked their sexual license exams and were left with the illegitimate children and debilitating diseases. The way we failed to keep our eye on our sense of shame, which jumped bail and has been on the lam ever since. The swarm of divorces and slews of late and paltry child support payments, and the struggling immigrants who help us around the house and in the yard, and whom we pay under the table and not damn much. It's a wonder 151% of the country isn't below the poverty line. And yet, we are the best generation in history. Which goes to show, history stinks. But at least we are fabulous by historical standards. The baby boom was a carefully conducted scientific experiment. The empirical results are us. Take the biggest generation in the most important country, put them in excessively happy families, give them too much affection, extravagant freedom, scant responsibility, plenty of money, a modicum of peace if they dodged the draft, a profusion of opportunity, and a collapse of traditional social standards. You get better people. Well, not better. Taken one by one, we're as maddeningly smug as Abel and as vile as Cain, the way people always have been. But we're better behaved, although better behaved isn't the right way to put it either. We're willful, careless, rash, vain, indulged, and entitled. We're mad, bad, and dangerous to know, as Lady Caroline Lamb said of the poet. But she was an ex-girlfriend, and ex-girlfriends say those things, especially if you marry their cousin Annabella, who had a few choice words about the poet herself, but she was an ex-wife, and ex-wives say those things. The point here is that a bunch of rhymeless Lord Byrons is a good description of the baby boom and the romantic, disorderly, harum-scarum lives we've led. Except, of course, modern medicine cured the clubfoot, and we never slept with our sister. Come on, there were plenty of other people to sleep with, and it wasn't like we didn't have cars and couldn't get out of the house. And we haven't embarked on a campaign to liberate Greece. The EU has a central bank for that. Not that we didn't give the Greeks a few bucks to see the Parthenon and knock back some ouzos when we embarked on our carnival cruise through the Aegean to Athens. And we didn't die of diarrhea at Missolonghi, the cruise ship gift shop at Imodium. Also, our poetry's awful. The name Baby Boom Poetry will be given in future literary anthologies as probably Wurs Libre. Other than that, we're a lot like Lord Byron. Larger-than-life personalities, providing the world with amusement. Hearts in the right place, even when our private parts aren't. Thinking noble thoughts somewhat thoughtlessly, and being high-minded in a mindless sort of way. We leave a mess behind, like Lord Byron did, but compare it to the mess that a generation previous left behind, like the generation previous to Lord Byron, which was Napoleon Bonaparte. You won't catch us, or George Gordon, 6th Baron, either, taking credit for plunging all of Europe into bloodshed by putting our own name on a bunch of wars, or posing for pictures while groping ourselves with our hand someplace where there's nothing to grope, or not leaving Moscow until it's on fire and it's winter and nobody's plowed the roads, or letting the Battle of Waterloo be won on the playing fields of Eton, which is nowhere near Belgium, or being the person everybody in the lunatic asylum is being. I mean, if I'm in the lunatic asylum, I'm just being me. It's not a bad idea to have spoiled brats rule the world. The rulers of the ancient world may have been brats, but they weren't spoiled. If the Spartan mother admonishment to sons on their way to an all-guy outing, "Come back with your shield or on it," is any indication. Ancient potentates seem to have had a firm sense of purpose rare among us pampered baby boomers eager for instant gratification. Mrs. Farrell must have popped her ankh when she caught Mr. Farrell blowing the IRA on a 455-foot pyramid of Cheops for his next stage in life. But he kept at it for 20 years. We'd never pull something like that, especially if our Queen of the Nile happened to be the principal breadwinner in the family and was already on the phone to the partner in her law firm who handles community property settlements. And the mighty of yore must not have been doted upon sufficiently to make them emotionally needy and desirous of being liked by absolutely everybody. If Pontius Pilate had been a baby boomer, when he ordered the crucifixion, he would have given Christ a safe word. Barbarian hordes used to run the ancient world, too, or, at any rate, run frequently into large parts of the ancient world to rape and pillage. The baby boom would make a lousy barbarian horde, no matter what Athenians had to say after we had knocked back some Uzos. We'd be galloping across the Mongolian steppes, sneezing, because we're allergic to horse dander, going, "What, no sushi?" and living off the fat of the land when we're trying to cut down on the fat in our diet. Then it's time to rape and pillage. Rape is very wrong. Also, it's damaging to the self-esteem. When somebody cries rape, it's a rejection, not just of your actions and attitudes at the moment, but of you as a whole person. Baby boom barbarian horde members would be smiling shyly at the cowering women folk asking, "Get pillaged often?" Then we'd start fiddling with the firebrand instead of burning the houses down and explain that we were trying to stop smoking. Plus, pillaging means lugging all that stuff back with you before there were wheelie bags. And wheelie bags are probably hard to roll along the Mongolian steppes while you're galloping on a horse. I don't think we would have been much use in the Middle Ages, either, going on the Crusades by hitchhiking with flowers in our hair. Then we'd gather in a circle holding hands and try to levitate Jerusalem. If we'd had a bee-in while Saladin was around, I doubt he would have just let it be. We probably would have fared worse with the Sultan in the Levant than we did with the National Guard at Kent State. In fact, the baby boom wouldn't have been much good at committing any of history's atrocities, history being mostly a record of atrocities, and this may be why we got a D in it. Our generation would have discovered the New World, got a whiff of tobacco, said, "We can start smoking again," moved in with the Indians and convinced them to take their wigwam's condo. A baby boom Cortez, eyeing Montezuma, would have been thinking, "Gold? Nah, Got that hedged with long calls in precious metal commodities. How about an emerging market fund invested in outsourcing high-priced domestic Spanish Inquisition torture to low-cost overseas hashtag human sacrifice? The notorious triangle trade, sugar, rum, slaves, likewise would have been in Chapter 11 if operated by the baby boom. We use NutraSweet and Splenda. Rum means a Jimmy Buffett concert, and then we're so hungover we sleep right through the slave auction. Not that we ever would have brought Africans to America as human chattel. We would have brought Africans to America to make sure we never had to listen to Turkey in the Straw again. History would have been very different. A C+, at least, if the baby boom had ruled the world. And I will give children to be their princes, and babes shall rule over them. Isaiah 3:4. 18. Big, damn, messy bundle of joy. And we will. Because the American baby boom is the future. We'll all turn into us eventually. As soon as families get excessively happy and start feeling too much affection for their kids. Unless, of course, extravagant freedom, scant responsibility, plenty of money, and a modicum of peace lead to such a high rate of carbon emissions that we all fry or drown. But you can't have everything. And you can have a profusion of opportunity and a collapse of traditional social standards. Western Europe and the wealthiest parts of Asia and Latin America have had them already. And they're almost as useless as we are, meaning useless in the best abundant disposable income with ample leisure time to devote to pointless activities that don't harm anybody much except ourselves way. Baby boom-like places all seem to be engaged in bellicose national political deadlock the way we are in America. There's much tut-tutting about bellicose national political deadlock, but it's an improvement on bellicose national political purpose, world conquest, for example. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the insert name of deity or national leader whom you dislike most. He is trampling out the vintage where the grapes of wrath are stored. He hath loosed the fateful lightning of his terrible swift sword. That doesn't sound like any fun at all, except maybe the vintage trampling part. We and our kindred generation of European baby boomers brought down the Berlin Wall. Reagan and Thatcher and Gorbachev get the kudos, but it was the baby boom that did the job. After I'd given up on the messenger profession and become a foreign correspondent, you get the same frosty treatment from receptionists, I spent some time behind the Iron Curtain in the USSR, Poland, and East Germany. Everything, including the toilets, was made of crumbling concrete. Buildings were constructed without benefit of plumb bob or spirit level. There were wire mesh nets around the tops of the taller structures because pieces of the crumbling concrete kept falling off. Furniture looked as if it had been made by the 7th grade shop class. Food was a lard sandwich, except they were out of bread. Roads were paved with random bucket loads of asphalt dumped in the right-of-way. Cars, trucks, and buses had been reverse-engineered from Tootsie Toys and went bumping down moon-cratered streets, sputtering, misfiring, and burping clouds of smoke. You could have made a fortune standing on a Moscow street corner with a screwdriver and a timing light, had fortunes been allowed to be made. Cosmos brand filter cigarettes had to be held upright, or the tobacco dribbled out the end of the paper tube. Matches didn't work. After you struck a match, you put it back in the matchbox, because it was just as likely to light as any other match in there. The dial telephones buzzed with static. Assuming they were all tapped, there must be reams of telephone conversation transcriptions somewhere in the KGB files reading, There was nothing to do but drink bad vodka, and a lot of it. The Poles had a joke about a man from Warsaw who visits his brother in America. The brother says, Would you like a drink?
Of course.
So the American brother goes to the liquor cabinet, gets out a bottle of vodka, and pours them both a drink.
And then, says the man from Warsaw, do you know what my brother did? He put the cap back on the bottle.
The Soviets may have been a nuclear power, but all they ever blew up was Chernobyl. I was in Poland when it happened. I said to a Pole, I understand that because of the fallout, we're supposed to avoid fresh vegetables. He said,
fresh vegetables?
As ugly as Chernobyl was, it was nothing compared to Kamikulture. Older men wore Harry Truman suits, but looking as if they had been fitted to Harry and worn by Hervé Villechaize on Fantasy Island. Older women wore house dresses so ugly and so flowered that our grandmothers, even in their most muttering to themselves in the kitchen mode, would have recoiled in horror. Young people tried to be hep, but it didn't work. One youthful Soviet minder, who'd been assigned to me as my translator, wore a pair of blue jeans in the most wrong possible blue, and as ungene-like in cut and as denimless as a burqa. On the back of these was a patch of fake leather, imitating the Levi's patch except three times too large, upon which was emblazoned Dakota Jean, with Dakota misspelled in several places. The baby boom was laughing at the communists. Finally, on November 9th, 1989, the East German communists, being sensitive to ridicule, the way Germans are, gave up on Marxist-Leninism, and the Berlin Wall came down. For totalitarianism to work, everybody has to keep a straight face. Dictators don't stand a chance with the baby boom. The Hitler snot-comb mustache, the Mussolini beanie, Mao, lacking only a gold chain to be dressed like a fat swinger in a Nehru jacket, plus all those silly dictator arm gestures. Baby boomers would be photoshopping their cats. Notice how the leaders of today's China are careful to appear in public looking like they're headed to a funeral. Probably their own. I'll bet Chairman Miao memes are all over Chinese microblogs. And not to bring Jimmy Buffett into this again, but did you ever notice how Stalin kind of looks like Jimmy when Buffett had hair and a mustache? If the Russians had posted videos of Stalin lip-syncing Margaritaville, Uncle Joe would have had to go gulag his own bad self. The baby boom is the generation of the mocking tongue. The pen may be mightier than the sword, but not once you get people howling with laughter. A couple of spit takes and the ink runs, the sword rusts, and the baby boom triumphs. It will take a while to turn the whole world into baby boomers. For one thing, due to declining birth rates, they won't be a boom like we were, with the same weight of numbers on their side. On the other hand, aging populations in places such as Russia and China will let these babies speak in booming voices. And a lot of the world is still stuck in the idiot generation and hasn't progressed to greatest, let alone attained the glory of BB. But Muammar Gaddafi's clothes, grooming, and arm gestures were so dictator-ridiculous that even the fool Libyans shot him. Also, there's a little bit of the baby boom in everyone. I was in Lebanon in 1984 during the Civil War, and I was stopped at a checkpoint manned, or I should say, buoyed, by 15 and 16-year-old members of the militant Islamic fundamentalist Hezbollah. They were waving their AK-47s around, digging the barrels into the dirt, and scratching their ears with the muzzle sights. Gun safety courses must go begging in Lebanon. One of the young militants pointed his AK-47 at my face. It's surprising how small the hole is in the end of an AK-47, considering what a big difference it could make in your social life. He demanded my passport. When he saw that I was an American, he subjected me to a 20-minute tirade at gunpoint about America, Satan, Devil, and how the United States had caused the Lebanese Civil War, colonialism, imperialism, Zionism, and every other problem he could think of. Then he handed my passport back and said, "As soon as I get my green card, I'm going to dentist school in Dearborn, Michigan." Militant Islamic fundamentalism probably had a tough time surviving the karaoke nights